We back.
Welcome to another episode of the Courtcast, your favorite basketball podcast. By the voice, you can tell it's me, the voice of reason, the voice of truth. I speak the truth, only the truth, nothing but the truth.
Y'all
gotta stop with this reaction, bro. Like, you know, I'm going to say it every goddamn week. So,
you're putting them through it.
Just stop with this reaction. Well, yeah, it's me, Faye, with another episode of the Courtcast. It's a pretty special episode. It's the post Super Bowl episode of the Courtcast. You know, I had Tos in here yesterday. And
it was shiesty.
The real shiesty. But yeah, at the show with me, I have the Black Skibaylis. It's good to have you back, Femi.
Thanks for having me, as always. You know, know what time it is.
And then, you know, the other half, Shannon Sharp, the blind witnesses.
The one that gets the Super Bowl pick correct, you know, things of that nature.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
No, tell him.
Welcome to the show, Tosin, but this is a basketball podcast. Can we keep it strictly to basketball?
Please. Before we jump into basketball, I remember like the last episode where you beat your chest because you got the Bengals going into the Super Bowl. So I want you to apologize to Matthew Stafford for the insults and the mediocrity tag that you've given him.
Okay.
And please go back and apologize.
Matthew Stafford.
That last episode too, you were on him. You're on
Matthew Stafford.
The O-R word, bro.
Matthew Stafford, I'm sorry, okay? You are a top 10 quarterback in this league. Just because Tom Brady retired. Just because Tom Brady retired, you made it to the top 10 list.
Five.
Stop.
And wait.
Stop.
And no, I don't know about five, but he's ahead of Dak.
You know, the Dak thing was more of an agenda point of view.
just agree with you right now. Is he ahead of Dak?
Yeah. You've had enough apologies from me from one day. Like,
it's not an apology.
It's not like they won.
Yes or no?
It's not like they won the Super Bowl because of Matthew Stafford. It was more Aaron Donald than Cooper Kupp. So,
who is the best quarterback in the fourth quarter in the entire league?
Who's the best quarterback in the fourth quarter in the entire league? Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr.
Oh my goodness. This year it was Matthew Stafford.
No, all he did was throw pick sixes.
Fine.
Matthew Stafford is a top 10 QB in this league. Dak Prescott is not better than Matthew Stafford. Can we get into the basketball aspect of things now?
Yeah, we can definitely get into it.
Thank you.
You lack bass in your voice when you were apologizing. It didn't come with the same energy.
Shout out Mary J. Blige, man. That was the only good thing about the Super Bowl. The halftime show was amazing as far as I'm concerned.
Switch the topic like Skip. You know what I mean, Skip?
Let's get into... You're the Skip himself of this show. Let's get into today's topics. First of all, you know, I don't like talking about this team anymore. My plan this week was to not talk about this team. And I bet you guys guess where I'm going already with this. Like, this team is too trash. I felt like they didn't deserve our airtime. But after that game against the Warriors, against the Lakers on Saturday, I just had to talk about it, man, because first of all, let's look at that game from a Warriors point of view. There's only one takeaway from that game. To see Klay Thompson cook the way he was cooking in that fourth quarter, where he literally couldn't miss a shot, it was just perfect for me. Like, as a basketball fan, no matter what team you support, to see Klay Thompson get hot again, it is an amazing thing. And I want to get you guys' thoughts about the Golden State point of view, your point of view on that game from Golden State performance. Your thoughts on that game from a Golden State point of view?
Joseph, you want to take that?
Yeah, I can. Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson was a highlight for me. Klay Thompson getting back to that groove, getting back to that hot streak. It was game six, Klay.
That was game six, Klay, man. That was game six,
Klay. When Klay is on fire, no one is near him. That quick release.
But I think he had 16 or 20 in the fourth quarter, 33 points in total. It was just...
Right. And my fear of Klay Thompson coming back, I was scared about his defense. Is he going to be able to like put in the same shift in defense? That guy is actually working on defense. He's not a liability on defense by any stretch of imagination.
Yeah.
So it's still like Klay is not back 100%, but the percentage Klay is at right now is still enough to take them to championship.
Yeah, that is Klay Thompson for you, man. It's like when he was out those 2 years, there's one thing I kept saying. The flick of the wrist is going nowhere. Klay Thompson still know how to shoot a basketball in his grave. So there's nothing about that. Femi, what about you? What are your thoughts on that game from Golden State?
Klay! Klay! Nah, for real. First of all, he's probably like, player as like my favorite player to watch in terms of like his form, shooting, his technique, you know, coming off the screen, having a wide pace while you're trying to shoot the basketball is a very hard shot to make because you're coming off the dribble and you have to set your feet, set your balance, take the shot. And you know, so it was honestly, I didn't get to see the game in its entirety because I just seen the highlights. I feel like I missed out on something. You know what I'm saying? I feel like I missed out on an experience. You know?
Like, yeah, that's what it was.
Just coming up the screen, like, catch and shoot.
That's what it was. And it was like, everything was falling into Klay's hands. I'm watching the game, and in the fourth quarter, I think Steph starts to throw a cross-court pass to Jordan Poole, and Trevor Ariza tips it. And it falls into Klay's hands, like Draymond Green was setting him up for a wide open three. And you know, Klay steps in automatic. You know, at some point, Andrew Wiggins went one on one with the Lakers defense, missed the shot, rebound, passed it to Klay wide open on the left. You know what's going to happen after that. Like, as a Raptors fan, it took me back to obviously, you know, what Klay was doing to us in that game six, where he had 30 points on 12 shots. And to see him put up 33 on a very efficient field goal percentage and shooting from the three as well, it was amazing. Because if you think about it, earlier in the fourth quarter, Klay went at Austin Reeves, and Austin Reeves blocked his shot. And then the next time he went at him, he finished and talked trash, and then he went hot. And it was just beautiful to see, man. It was beautiful to see.
Wait, I have a question, dude. Have you noticed that since Klay has been back, when is like crunch time, they run more plays for Klay than Steph?
Yeah, I think it's because Steph is in a slump though.
You don't think it's something that would carry on to like important games like playoffs or anything?
Nah, I think it's good to have that option, but I think at the end of the day, Steph will still get the ball in his hands.
No. In the fourth, I think they're going to trust way more because, hey, to be honest, I trust Klay's shot more, in my opinion. I don't know.
At the end of the day, they still have Iguodala on that team and fate of the universe of the line.
Facts.
Gotta give it to
facts. No, everyone knows Iggy takes the big shots.
Facts. I agree.
I can But then, coming at it from a Lakers point of view, first of all, there's two reasons why the Lakers lost that game. It's LeBron James, it's Anthony Davis. I don't want to hear... I don't want to hear anything about Russell Westbrook. Don't want to hear anything about Trevor Ariza. Don't want to hear anything about Taylor Tucker, Malik Monk, Austin. I don't want to hear anything about any other player. It is LeBron James. It is Anthony Davis. To the extent that somebody is tweeting, Aaron Donald is the only AD in LA. That's not it. Just so you know.
That's the real AD in LA. That is not a fraud. It's not.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
AD, Femi, at some point in the fourth quarter, the Warriors literally went small on the Lakers. How can you go small on a team with Anthony Davis and get away with it? If that's Giannis, aren't you getting 20 in the fourth quarter?
That, let me tell you something. If that was Giannis and you went Kevin Looney like that, everybody is catching one by one.
Simple.
Like, line up one by one. You take out Kevin Looney on Embiid, everybody's catching it one by one. And I was, when I saw towards the, I was watching Dallas and I saw towards the end, I didn't see Kevin Looney on the floor and I just saw it was literally a small ball and I didn't see no AD highlights. I was like, I had to check the stats and I was like blown away. I was just blown away. No. It's unacceptable. Nine rebounds
against the small ball Warriors team. Are you telling me Joel Embiid doesn't rock into Chase Center and pull down 20 boards? Are you telling me Giannis doesn't get 20 boards? Like, AD, you couldn't even get a double-double.
You're getting 22 at least.
With 15 points? That is mediocrity at its finest. And not to talk about the fact that a few days later, they had just put up the worst performance I've ever seen, losing to the G League Blazers. AD did not take a shot in the fourth quarter in that game. They let Anthony Simons take over.
You see that game blew me.
And if it's Russell Westbrook to take the heat as well. So that is your chance. Okay, if Russell is the major problem in this team, that is your chance to go there and say, watch this. We're going to blow them out by 30 points, blow them out by 25 points. But you lose to the G League and you let Yusuf Nurkic baby you from quarter one to quarter four to the extent you don't take a shot in the fourth quarter. That is embarrassing.
17
points
on 7 and 10 rebounds.
That is embarrassing.
That's embarrassing.
That is
it. That was MB. At least 30 and you're tossing.
Tosin, what are your thoughts on AD in that Lakers game?
I think AD needs to be ashamed of himself because if you're 6'11" and you know you're still regarded as a top 12 talent in the league, you see the other team not adjusting to you being on the court, like they're treating you like you're a nobody, they're playing their regular stuff, playing small ball, and they're not adjusting to you as a big man.
Facts.
You need to just go home and cry your girlfriend's
laps. Facts.
Yes.
That is.
You need to say Marvin's room while you're at it.
Fam. Tosin couldn't have said it any better. As a 6'11 power forward, regarded as a top 12 talent in the NBA, and defenses are not reacting to you being on the floor to the extent that they are taking out their center and going small ball while you're still on the floor. Imagine taking out your center against Joel Embiid. Imagine taking out your center against Nikola Jokic. Imagine taking out your center against Giannis. Imagine, like, I can't fathom the fact that they got away with that. And Shannon Sharp literally tweeted, AD, okay, there's no big in this game. Time to eat. And he made every single time I see AD jab step, sidestep, and pull up from mid-range, I want to pull my hair out because he does it every single time.
If
that was Vucevic is not taking small ball. He's going in the post to post.
Are you kidding me, Anthony? No, that's lowest of lows. That's lowest of lows. I'm sorry.
From Lakers' perspective, outside of AD being the
counterfeit, They
played very well, and it's very optimistic that LeBron is not going to shoot a 9 out of 27 in most games. Mm-hmm. AD, I mean, I'm not going to speak on AD. He might do that same thing.
We really shouldn't compliment AD again because it's when we said he was balling out that he started, you know, doing all this nonsense.
Shannon said it best. When AD says that he's somebody that they compare him to all the time, he's always trying to play up to it.
It's not like
competition.
But when they play the
Milwaukee, Giannis yes.
But one thing I want to point to is when they played against Milwaukee for a good stretch of the game, it was competitive, right? Mm-hmm. Against Golden State, competitive. So is there something to say about they play to their competition as far as when it's time to turn up, they try their best to play?
At the end of the day, it's dubs that matter, right? And you couldn't have asked for a better performance from Russell Westbrook in terms of sacrifices on Saturday. Did not take any dumb shots. Did not the fact that Russell didn't make a highlight is a good thing, because he did everything right that they were asking of him from a Laker point of view, right?
Can I say something?
Well, yeah, go ahead.
When was
a time by you come closer, we can't hear you.
So I said there was a time in the where Pond hit Russell in the corner and Russell was on the move and Russell got it in one motion and pulled up. That was like, Russell, I need more.
Yeah,
if you can just play with the flow of offense, move up the ball. I'm not even saying back cut, just move up the ball. Pond will find you. Like, keep offense moving. Like, you should be going to take plays and just keep the ball moving. Shots are going to be there. Like, I just saw him step, just seeing him step into that kind of shot in rhythm, pull up. I was like, I need more.
Yeah,
need more of that.
He was very good on Saturday. He had 19 points, I think. Shot over 50% from the field, over 50% from three, made all his free throws, had only one turnover, and he was the only starter with a positive plus minus in the whole game. So,
absolutely.
So he played very well. And in terms of what everyone has been asking from Russell, he did that on Saturday. And it's now left for AD. And shout out Austin Reeves, man. That kid is... He's the MVP of this Lakers team, aside LeBron James.
Legit.
He's not scared. He reminds me, and it's funny because, you know, they will say it's just because both of them are whites, but he does remind me a lot of Caruso. Like, he's facts.
He plays greedy, he plays hard, and he's highly intelligent.
Yeah, he's not afraid to get embarrassed. He's going to make the big plays. And one thing I've noticed, especially come crunch time, Austin Reeves secures some of the most important offensive rebounds I've seen for this Lakers team ever.
He's going to go get it for you.
Every single time I watch the Lakers, I see him get a critical offensive rebound that keeps them in the game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree.
But we've talked about things from an AD perspective and from, you know, the team as a collective. And if they continue, you know, if they continue to play like they played on Saturday, they'll click and they'll start to win games.
Yeah, I hope the championship celebration going on in like LA right now is like contagious to like boost them.
But then I just have to bring it up. LeBron James was absolutely terrible on Saturday, especially come fourth quarter.
One for 10 in the fourth.
1 for 10 in the fourth. Three turnovers. Missed, I think, three or four free throws, missed the tip-in, missed the bunny at the rim. Like, he wasn't good enough in that fourth quarter.
Air ball.
And sometimes I'm like, Bron, I know you can make that three, but, like, there's no need for this heat check right now. It's a close ball game. Like, don't pull up from 30.
And especially the free throws. Like, Skip, your mentor, has always said this a bunch of times. Like, late game free throws are very important. And he got a chance to tie the game. Yeah. And
even though it was a BS call, like the call was absolutely bull drive, he still had the chance to get hit off free throws. And he misses the first. Immediately he missed that first, you knew Skip was going to go off, because that is Skip's number one accusation against him.
And
you know the funny thing is, Skip has never lied about.
Sorry, come again?
I was never lying about that. And you know, so I've always seen Bron, step up that, hey, give me the ball, let them follow me. And I'll go to the free throw and I'm going to make at least one out of two. But when it's time to make two out of two, you never see it's rare. Yeah. It's really rare. Skip was never lying about that.
Yeah, because free throws cost Lakers almost every single. I think they were 22 of 38 from the free throw line. Anthony Davis has literally forgotten how to make his free throws. The man was shooting 80% in the bubble, and now I don't even know what is wrong with him. LeBron James, he's never been a great free throw shooter, but he's shooting 75% from the stripe this season. And free throws cost people games more than people know, more than you think, man. Because it's consistently, when you watch the Lakers and they lose close ball games, they shoot like 60% from the free throw line. It's consistent with them.
That's
yeah.
And come playoff time, is probably what will haunt them come playoff time.
Definitely, because there are three superstars and not great free throw shooters.
Yeah,
and but Russell, when it's crunch time, one of your three superstars is going to have the ball.
Russell doesn't miss crunch free throws.
Please.
I know this. It's facts. Femi will tell you this too. Russell doesn't miss crunch free throws.
Femi, tell me.
Russell doesn't miss clutch free throws, man. Like, don't let your agenda get ahead of it. Don't let your Femi, does Russell miss crunch free throws? I don't think I've seen him miss a free throw in clutch time. I'm sorry.
Well, once or twice.
You know, but he's the most reliable when it comes to, you know, late game free throws, which
out of the three,
which is not a good thing. It's not a good thing. It's not a
three. I'll trust Russell.
It's not an amazing thing. Yeah, but I would trust him the most. But also, I want to shout out Frank Vogel. His rotations, his timeouts, his adjustments, everything. He could do no wrong on Saturday. It just came down to the fact that his major two superstars, his number one A and his 1 and 1A options on offense did not show up. That's just what it came down to.
I agree. I think he has started making some good adjustments.
Yeah.
And at this point, he's on the players now. They can't blame the coach anymore.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on to the Nets versus Miami game. Woo! That was a game. That was a solid game.
That was a solid game.
From a Nets point of view, it showed me two things. First of all, I told Tosin this the other day. Kyrie Irving is the third most unguardable player in the NBA, in my opinion. Simply because his ability to create separation as well as hit some very particularly tough shots on great defenders, whether you have length, strength, quickness, athleticism, all that, he can still hit that tough shot on you. And his shiftiness to be able to, you know, let him make those tough shots is why I say he's the most unguardable, because he's a three-level scorer and he can create separation at any time. So
yeah,
I don't know, man. For him to do that at 6'2" at best, like, I might be giving him an inch or two on that. But for me, Kyrie is the third most incredible player in the league. It's KD, Joel Embiid, then Kyrie. And then, secondly, the Nets might just be the favorite to win it all. Definitely my favorites in the East.
I mean, we first have to see how they're able to mesh, because like I said, the problem is still the coach and how is going to call plays.
I agree.
Seth Curry making shots in Philly, as much as we don't like Doc, they have a system in place that they run on Brooklyn.
What it's system? The system is Embiid and Inshallah.
Okay. Okay. Yes, that's fair. But we're yet to see how they can get is Seth Curry open as far as right now that KD isn't playing. When KD is playing and Kyrie is playing, of course people are going to be open.
Let me tell you something. I don't think Ben Simmons could have dreamed of a better situation. Like, in as much as I want a lot from Ben Simmons, to whom much is given, much is expected. And the reason I expect a lot from Ben Simmons is because of the level of talent he is. Yeah, he can shoot. That's fine. But then I didn't expect him to act the way he acted, especially because of the way he played in the last playoffs when he had little maestro under the basket. And that was an easy opportunity for 3 points. And he only ended up getting one because he passed up a shot to Matisse Thybulle. But you look at the Nets team. Ben Simmons is now not expected to score 15 to 20 a night for the Nets to win. Nobody expects that from him. All he's there to do is play defense, you know, find guys for wide open shots, rebound the ball, and, you know, push the pace, which James Harden couldn't, because Ben Simmons is a one-man fast break, right? Once he gets the rebound, he's quick, he has handles, so he's pushing the pace. And if Seth Curry or another shooter can keep up with him, Ben Simmons last season created the most wide-open threes, the most open threes for his teammates. So imagine that on a Brooklyn team with a Seth Curry, with a KD, with a Kyrie Irving, with a Joe Harris. Like, he fits in and meshes his talent and all everything his game is embedded with fits in so well with the squad in Brooklyn that the only thing that I can see that can stop them from meshing properly is either his attitude or the coach. And then, if you think about it, when, let's say, Ben Simmons was doing dribble handoffs with Seth Curry in Philly, when he was doing those dribble handoffs, so he hands it off and he's rolling to the rim, right? Like when Bam does it with Duncan Robinson, when he hands it off, he's rolling to the rim. But in Philly, while he's rolling, he's sometimes cut off by Joel, sometimes he's cut off by Tobias Harris. But in the Nets, especially because I expect them to run a lot of that small ball for a lineup with Ben at the five, he's rolling to the dunker spot where a lot of people claim he's best at come playoff time, and there's nobody there to be in his way. So he's going to be a lot more effective in the offense. And then, everyone was talking about, oh, he was unplayable down the stretch against Atlanta in the playoffs. The reason is Ben Simmons was their primary ball handler, right? So he's the one bringing the ball up the floor. So if your primary ball handler is shooting 30% from the free throw line, obviously they're going to go hack a shack on him and he's going to miss the free throws. So that's why he was unplayable. But Ben Simmons is not bringing the ball up the floor in crunch time for Brooklyn. He's not first option. He's not second option. He's not third option.
KD or Kai. Exactly. And those are the two best options in the entire league.
Exactly. So, like, for me, and then you have a Drummond as well, who can bang bodies with a Giannis, with a Brook Lopez, with a Serge Ibaka come playoff time.
What I'm excited to do is to watch today's game because Kyrie is not going to play, but those two guys are going to play. And I'm excited to see their effect.
And Ben Simmons has met up with this thing as well.
With the team, yeah.
Yeah. So, Femi, I want to know, what are your thoughts?
I don't think Nets are the favorites.
Did you see the show he put on in that fourth quarter?
Disgusting.
I was telling Tosi, we need to open a Kyrie Fandos club, man.
It was filthy.
The man dribbled in between the five Miami Heat players and finished a tough bucket at the rim. Like, come on, man. Come on, you don't do that. That is disrespectful.
Like listeners, Kyrie. I ain't gonna say it's just the best type of ability is ability.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, but we're hearing that the New York might take down the restrictions.
Okay, right. I still think the caca and the step back pop.
Oh wow, we'll get into that later. I did some really detailed research, so we'll get into that.
That's the thing. Okay.
Wait. But what did you call James Harden? The step back what?
Step back, pop.
Poppy.
Wow.
So let me tell you something. When Hardy is more, I don't know what it is. Like, it is the last 3 years. It's not Harden. I personally know and love. You know what I'm saying? Like, when it comes to his flaws, I'm very upset. Like, I'm very, he likes to step back, but never to step up. Like, but it's just time. When Harden is pushed.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I understand because, in my opinion, Joel Embiid is the best player in the world, right? And I would still have Philly over. I would still have Milwaukee over Philly in terms of my favorites to win the chip because Giannis is just a beast, a freak of nature, if you would like.
Right. Oh, fair.
I can't hear you. We can't hear you.
Right? I said.
Yeah.
Fourth is
Yo, Femi, your sound is really bad. We really can't hear you. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Tosin.
Yeah.
I want to know your points, your thoughts about that game from a Nets point of view, because you are the Nets supporter on this team.
See, first of all, the first thing to talk about is
Kyrie.
People say Kyrie cannot lead a team. And maybe there's some truth to it, especially leading a team for an extended period of time. I would say Kyrie did a good job with Boston Celtics. They faced a Milwaukee team that it was difficult to overcome. Kyrie had his downfalls and he disappeared in that series. I know that. But Kyrie impressed me against Miami. Kyrie went down early in the game on his scare, and he didn't really play Kyrie level for the first three quarters. And I want to shout out Patty Mills and Cam Thomas.
Those guys,
they kept us in the game, and the ball. Cam Thomas is not scared of anything. He would take that three on anyone. He would take that mid-range. And Patty Mills is Patty Mills. Patty Mills has been a six man all his life. So if you think about it, Kyrie was playing with basically a sixth man and no one really. And they had a game plan. Miami had a game plan coming into the game to double Kyrie on drives to the basket or make Kyrie give up the ball. And the sickest highlight from that game was when Kyrie took on Jimmy Butler and what's the name of the other guy?
Bam?
No, the one that defends KD.
Oh, PJ.
PJ and Jimmy on Kyrie, and he danced between both of them. Two other guys came for Kyrie, and he got to the hoop and finished.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Now, if that's not signature Kyrie, I don't know what is. It was just amazing to see. He scored 18 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And that's the most by a net player this season. So just very excited to see. Obviously, we're super depleted right now.
And think about it with Kevin.
With Kevin. The prospect is high. Before Kevin comes back, I'm really excited to see what he can do with Seth Curry and Ben Simmons.
I'm telling you, this Nets team just looks a lot more complete. Like, think about it. Last year, you expected Blake Griffin to defend Giannis on an island.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's ending one way, 8 times out of 7. But now, you have, in my opinion, that there's 2-3 guys in the league that can do a job on Giannis. Bam Adebayo is number one. Ben Simmons is number two, in my opinion. He has the length. He has the strength. He has the athleticism. He has the quickness. Nobody's stopping Giannis, right? Nobody's stopping Giannis. Let's get it straight. Most superstar players in the league cannot be stopped. But some players would like make it more difficult for them to get those numbers that they get.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, Ben Simmons is, you know, he's going to play a major role in terms of the Nets winning the chip. Now, whether his mentality is ready for that, given what we saw from him this last season, I don't know. But one thing is for sure, the Eastern Conference is extremely stacked. And not only is it stacked, we're building some rivalries right now.
And the fact that Ben Simmons couldn't have gone to a better situation. Ben Simmons is literally on the one team that doesn't need to shoot the ball.
Exactly. And think about it. The last real rivalry we had in the Eastern Conference was probably the Knicks Heat back in the day. Now, you're seeing what's happening with Joel Embiid. Shout out Joel Embiid saying, "I thought he had a lot of swag." You know, I love that. You know, you're seeing there's a bit of KD saying, "I'm gonna need some size, so I'm gonna go with Rudy Gobert." I'm gonna go with Rudy Gobert. Hey, Bron is a fool, man. Bron is a fool.
Bron was looking for trouble.
You could tell.
It was like, yo, he hasn't played yet. Is he injured?
I'm watching. I'm like, Bron is picking Fred VanVleet over James Harden. I'm like, come on, Bron. You know what you're doing. You know what you're doing.
It was like, as per request from Charles.
From Chuck.
I'm a pick Fred VanVleet.
No, man, that all-star draft was hilarious, man. But
nah,
you know, come playoff time, the East is going to be a hot one, which once again proves I'm always right, because I said this about the East earlier being the better conference. But man, them haven't learned to stop going against.
But But what does it say about LeBron, though? Wherever LeBron goes, everybody gets scared and leaves.
Oh, stop. 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 Stop.
I'm just saying.
But yeah, we focused on the Nets for a long enough time. Let's talk about the Miami Heat. There were two takeaways from that game, right? For me, number one, Bam Adebayo is the true definition of a guy that can not only defend, but lock up 1 through 5. He can do it. He can lock up a point guard, a shooting guard, a small forward, a power forward, and a center. He's not only can he do it, he's done it on a consistent level. I will always point to that clip of him defending Steph in the clutch against the Warriors last season, and he reacted to every move. Do you know how hard that is to react to every move Steph Curry makes? You have to be dialed in on defense.
Do you know someone else that has that capability? AD. And it just, like, it is just more shameful that
AD had it.
AD has that quickness, the length. He even has a larger length.
Wingspan. Yeah.
Yeah, wingspan. So, like, someone like Bam putting his life on the line, like, this guy would dive to the floor, dive for loose balls. And when you breathe near Bam, you're not scared that he's losing his life. So there's so many things that Bam's the truth. Bam's the truth.
Yeah, man, for real. And as for AD, like I said, there's only one AD in LA that plays defense. You already know who it is. Mm-hmm. And the second point of view from Miami Heat team for me is, I don't think they're a superstar-driven team. I think they're actually a team because they had contributions from everyone, every single one of their starters. In fact, every single player except two was in double figures that night. Every single one. And we saw what Kyle Lowry did to shut down the game. That was incredible defense, man. That was game 6, Kyle.
Yeah.
Making me proud.
And then once again,
making me proud.
Kendrick Perkins calls them those goons down in Wade County. It's facts, man. Spo is the leader of those goons, man. You could tell. Uh-huh. I don't know if you guys heard Jimmy Butler say sometimes Spo will come into the locker room and be like, Duncan, why the bleep did you not shoot that shot? Like, that's what Spo does with these guys. If you need a coach to motivate you, top 3 coach in the league, Eric Spoelstra is that guy. Some would even say
unsung hero is Udonis.
Yeah,
that guy. You've seen the past players talking to them in the huddle. Yeah. Talking about what are y'all niggas doing? Yeah. And they don't have anyone like that in Brooklyn. But
they don't have anyone like that in the league, man. Listen, it's cliche, but I always say it's that Heat culture thing is real. It is real. When you see the type of players they recruit, like PJ Tucker doesn't just slot into the Heat because PJ Tucker is a dog. Like, you have a Jimmy Butler. You have guys that will play defense without caring about putting points on offense. Like, come playoff time, you would need that. You would need that. They're a deep team as well because some of these guys, like Gabe Vincent, I dare you to leave them wide open. You better read the scouting report.
Those guys, they can shoot that ball.
They shoot the man. Miami is a problem, man. But Femi, I want to know your thoughts on the ring through the hoop, the flaming hoop.
Well, they are a very impressive team.
Yep.
I just looked up the box score, and I was like, if you have that on a consistent basis, where you have at least 6 to 7 players going double digits, you're sweeping. You're winning every playoff series in 5 to 6 games because that's just like the ball is popping. Mm-hmm. It's player movement, it's man movement. You know what I'm saying? Like, your best player had 14 and 19. That's to show, and I mean 14 points and 19 rebounds. That's to show nobody cares about the points.
Nobody cares. El Padrino, man. The golf.
So, like you said, that culture is definitely real. And if you have somebody like Udonis, like you said, on the sidelines telling you, hey, if you don't shoot the ball the next time you see that in that situation, because guess what? If you doing that, you know, defenses have to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, And you're like that hit it. When I look at that boy's profile, it just tells me that they're causing that defense to adjust, if not every possession.
Yep, that's facts. That's facts. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, come playoff time, the East is definitely the one to watch. Let's talk about the Philadelphia 76ers with Joel Embiid and God have mercy on my soul. What Joel Embiid is doing this season is not normal. Like, we need to, like, I don't think the MVP, I don't think there's even an MVP conversation again. I think it's him and only him, right? Because I'm watching the game against the Cavs, right? And I see Embiid miss a free throw, and Korkmaz rebounds it. And Embiid goes up, and as he's coming down with Jared Allen's life, his soul, his spirit, and every single thing he's known for. The man absolutely detonates. So did you guys see that dunk?
Yeah, I did. It was Grim Reaper-ish. He took his soul.
Of course. And then after, he posts a picture of the poster and says, and captions it, Godzilla. You're damn right. You're damn right, you're Godzilla. You're damn right. But
see, after that dunk, I called him the Guara.
See, when you take a man's life, you need to have remorse. This guy has no remorse. No remorse.
Bruh.
You're at least. You know, when Bron body, but this time around,
no, but this is
7-3.
Femi, this is Jared Allen, who nobody wants to meet at the rim, right?
Yeah.
You're telling me you're coming down with his soul? and you're putting up a 40-point triple-double while you're at it. The same week they trade Ben Simmons away, and you post a picture, and you post a picture of that guy and say, I thought he had a lot of swag. Like, come on, man. Joel Embiid is the best player in the world.
I'm just reading this about the Lakers. They said Frank Vogel concludes Lakers practice on Monday by announcing every player has to make 25 free throws before finishing their day's work. And I think that's absolutely amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's good coaching. But as
hopefully we're able to see that translate into the game.
Like I was saying about Joel Embiid, he's just he's the caca.
And Joel can make his free throws too. That's the plus.
That's what I'm saying. Like you can't go hack a shack on him.
Mm-mm.
You can't. You can't double him because you'll find the open shooter. You can't guard him on an island. What do you do when you see a 7'2", 85-pound man doing left-hazy pull-ups? You can't do anything.
The game against the Suns, yeah?
I was going to get into that, but for other reasons.
There was a couple seconds left.
God, I know what you're talking about.
The game and beat the ball in the
There was a play. The shot clock was running down. There was only 6 seconds left on the shot clock, right? Joel Embiid had the ball at the top of the key. The Suns had built a wall. Do you know what he did? He went twin, cross, catch it, 2 steps to the rim, dunk. How do you stop that, fam?
When a Joel is coming at you, it's like Aaron Donald's coming at you.
Fam, it's like...
But he's 7'3".
Run for your life.
Fam!
When he's coming through,
Joel Embiid is... Haven't said all that. There's one thing... Aside what I'll get into about James Harden later, there's one thing that will stop the Sixers from winning the chip, and it's Dr. Rivers, right? I'm watching the game against the Suns, and the Sixers are up 15 at 8 points, right? Tobias is cooking, had 30 points. Joel is cooking, had 35 points. By the way, shout out JaVale McGee. We'll get into the Suns later, but he was crucial in that win. And then you know, Dr. Rivers on the same day he's named as a top 15 coach of all time, which is absolutely egregious, by the way. He decides, oh, I'm take off, you know, I'll take off Joel with 2 minutes left in third. Here's the problem. He took off Joel, Tobias, and Tyrese Maxey. And his primary ball handlers were Furkan Korkmaz, Matisse Thybulle, and Danny Bleeping Green. Three of the worst ball handlers in the NBA. And then...
Wait, sorry, not to cut you off, but speaking about Danny Green, you know when in the commercial where LeBron was talking to his 16-year-old self?
Yeah.
So people were putting like captions as to what LeBron should have told Jokic. They said,
don't pass to Danny Green.
Do not pass the ball to that anybody called Danny Green.
But yeah.
Go for the foul.
But I'm watching. And I'm like, bro, what? What is even going? And at the same time, I'm tweeting, Doc Rivers, you are this, you are that, you know. And the worst part is the Suns are making a run. The same thing he did game one, Eastern Conference semifinals against the Hawks, where he ran, where he went 10 deep in the playoffs and had a lineup of Matisse Thybulle, Danny Green, Shake Milton, Dwight Howard, and Furkan Korkmaz in a crucial third quarter where the Suns are going on a run. He doesn't put in Joel Embiid until the 6 minute mark in the fourth quarter. So you play 6 minutes without Joel and you end up losing by five. Are you telling me Joel doesn't go for 40 and the dub if he's in the game? Time and time again, I've seen this man's rotations cost not only the Sixers, but the Clippers. And I've been saying it consistently. How is Doc Rivers a top 15 coach of all time? He won one chip with a super team. How many years ago? 14 years ago. He's made one conference final since then in 2010. It's been 12 years since he made it past the conference semifinals. On the way to doing that, he's blown 3-3-1 leads while having players like Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, JJ Redick, Jamal Crawford. He's done all these things with these types of players.
All in their prime.
And still gets named the top 15 coach of all time. At what point do we look at him and say, oh, because as far as I'm concerned, this James Harden trade, the only person that has more pressure other than James Harden is Doc Rivers. Because Doc Rivers can't prove anything to me again. But he is left for the world and the whole of the, you know, analysts to see that this man might actually be a fraud because he is a fraud. So I want to do what you guys think about Doc, man, because I can't carry on with this.
I personally think while Doc Rivers needs to be a better coach, I honestly, my humble opinion, do not think there's any coach that can get the Sixers to win. Because Femi was talking about, the last 3 years is not the James Harden news.
Don't worry, I'll get into it.
What if James Harden is just showing that he's actually 32 and he's showing his age? He has slowed down. He's not as quick as before. And he's not able to blow by defenders like before. The calls that he needs to get 37 points, mostly from free throws. They're not making those calls for him as much as before.
Right. And he's heavier as well.
What if it's not the Houston James Harden you think? So I definitely think Doc Rivers is not going to help the situation. But I think the most pressure is definitely on James Harden. I don't want to hear if Doc Rivers, if James Harden doesn't win. I don't hear.
Me, Doc Rivers should be on the spot, man. I don't care.
Doc Rivers has already proven himself.
He hasn't. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He's won one chip 14 years ago with a Celtic super team with Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett in his prime. And what does he do after that? He blows to everyone called CP3, point guard. Probably top 3 point guard to play the game. You have a Blake Griffin. You have a DeAndre Jordan. You have a JJ Redick. You have a Mark Barnes. You have a Jamal Crawford off the bed. You have a Hikan Turkoglu. And you still don't even make it to the conference finals. And you blow 3-1 leads to Corey Brewer and the Houston Rockets without James Harden. Come on.
You can say he's washed now.
He hasn't proven enough. See, any coach that has this talent that I just called will win a number of games in the regular season. coaching comes into effect mostly come playoff time. And consistently, he has shown us that he cannot be trusted come playoff time. So what else does he need to do for him to be put under pressure? As far as okay. I'm concerned, aside James Harden, Doc Rivers has the most pressure come playoff time.
Okay, on that team, for sure. After James Harden, Doc Rivers.
Not just on that team. I'm talking about the whole of the NBA.
No. Westbrook has a lot of pressure on him.
The Lakers are trash.
If Westbrook...
We know they're not
going to... You have to think about it from Westbrook's perspective. If Westbrook ends up leaving that team, he's on his way to China soon. I'm just saying. It's a reality that Westbrook knows. So there's a lot of pressure on him.
Femi, what do you think, man? I'm tired of talking about Doc Rivers.
Doc Rivers or Dr. Rivers? Come to the screen. Let me talk to you. Come here, sir. Come to the screen. Come closer. See, you can't tell me you had a Chris Paul in his prime, a Blake Griffin in his prime, and Blake Griffin in his prime won Rookie of the Year. Was in the All-Star games, and it was for a reason.
And was taking souls. Don't forget, he was taking souls. He was like Shang Tsung.
He was better than the All-Star. He was better than the All-Star. He was baptizing people from the East to the West, back to the East, and back to the West. The man was baptizing gentlemen. You know what I'm saying? So, and you only made You never made a conference final. No, one time.
You blow 3-3-1 leads with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George coming off a finals MVP run for Kawhi Leonard.
Well, yeah, 3-1 in the what teams were they losing to? They were
is it coincidental that the first year Doc Rivers leaves, they make the conference finals? I think not. I don't think so.
You know, let me continue.
Let me tell you about that. You see, every game in that series, they were favored at double digits.
I'm talking about the Clippers of Chris Paul.
They were playing against the Houston Rockets. Went on a 25-something run without James Harden. Corey Brewer eliminated Doc Rivers. Do you know who Corey Brewer is?
He's a legend.
It's Nicky Young.
That guy is the only one that successfully took 400 steps traveling at the college. He's a legend.
Man, Nicky Young literally said Nicky Young was on that thing.
Think about it.
Chandler Parsons.
And sorry to cut you short, Femi, but that Nuggets team in the bubble, right?
Mm-hmm.
Game two, think about every game the Clippers lost. They were up by 20, almost 20 or more than 20. Game two, I think they were up 26. Game five, you know, after games four, Kawhi Leonard blocks Jamal Murray with his middle finger, so they don't lose that. Then game five, they're up 20, 23 or something. Game six, they're up 19. Game seven, they're up 16.
Yeah.
And you lose those games.
And you lose those games.
And then you go to Philly and you do the same thing. And you've done the same thing with the Clippers. At what point do we say, look, Doc Rivers, you are not.
And you know something, like I end up one, you know, the bubble one, I kind of enjoyed it because I was looking forward to it. But you see that Philly one, the game seven, you are at home and you are up 26.
Facts.
Because Maestray and little DeAndre Hunter and Von Collins. You have Joel Embiid, even though he was compromised. You have Ben Simmons, who had made 3 All-Star games up until that point. You had a Tobias Harris, who can give you 25. You are up 26 and you don't close it out. You have to go. You're not a topic. If after in a space of 3 to 4 years, I've consistently gone out in the playoffs in a myriad of ways, I'm sorry, you're not a top 15 coach. You're not top 20.
Thank you.
Okay, so with those points, you have to see that this marriage is built for failure, because you've seen a James Harden play with Kevin Durant.
Yeah, but Tosin,
Chris Paul, Westbrook,
I understand.
Kyrie,
I understand. But then, you know, it's sports. Like, Matthew Stafford was on the Lions, couldn't get anything done. You know, the claim was that he played with the Lions, right? He comes to the Rams. If he didn't win with the Rams, the narrative is going to remain the same. Am I right? Oh, you can't win with Matthew Stafford. Mm-hmm. James Harden is what Shannon Sharpe always says. The one thing about sports is you always have the chance to update your resume, which is why they're under the most pressure. Even though, you know, we might see that history doesn't favor them, the game is not one in the history, it's not one in the history books, it's one on the court. So if James Harden and Doc Rivers can go on the court and coach and play their asses off and win Philly a chip, all of a sudden the narrative for them changes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely. That's true. I agree. I completely agree. But the thing is, that game seven, it left a mark for me, because I don't think if you gave Phil Jackson a Joel Embiid, like if you gave Eric Spoelstra a Joel Embiid, if you gave a Ty Lue a Joel Embiid, come on, son.
We spent a lot of time on Dr. Rivers, man. Let's talk about the Phoenix Suns, right? The Phoenix Suns are. In fact, Tosin, I want you to go, because you were the one that complained to me that we're not giving them enough airtime.
Yeah, Phoenix Suns, like I was telling you, Faye, they're the most complete team from top to bottom in the entire league. When you have a team that it doesn't matter the type of matchup you present to them, they have answers for every type of matchup. They have three types of centers. They have DeAndre. They have Biyombo as
JaVale.
a small. What's it called when you're playing small ball? Small ball type of big, and you have a JaVale to bang with taller guys. And you look at their defense. You see Mikal Bridges. You see
Bosman.
I keep forgetting his name.
Jay Crowder.
You have a Chris Paul that is a really
CP3 plays defense though. CP3
yeah, really intelligent point guard that would always put the opposite point guard in foul trouble. Like that guy knows where he's doing, destroying
the
foul.
Do you know the thing that I hate the most about CP? Those mm-hmm. rip through fouls, they make me want to pull my hair they make me want to pull my hair out.
The annoying thing is he is toxic with it.
He knows
he's like, very toxic.
He will defend it to the death. Like I watched him defend himself against JJ Redick to the point that I started agreeing with him about the rip through foul, because I'll be consistent. You need to get rid of this thing. CP is abusing it, but he's like, you know, at what point do we bless guys for knowing the game? I'm like, he has a point, but still that rip through thing, especially
that one, and when an opposing player is at his back, this guy will shoot out, put his ass inside there.
The way CP manipulates defenders is so, especially if it's crunch time and your team is chasing the game, and then you see some stupid rip through foul, you're like, can this guy just go to hell, please?
Or DeAndre Ayton comes test the screen, and then he has the man on his wrist, and he's just punchable. And you say,
You look at the game against Philly. I think there was this thing, 4P call for Book, right? So because he knows Thibault, when he sets the screen for Book, he knows when Jay Crowder sets the screen for Book, he knows Thibault is going to try and chase and get Book.
Mm.
So all he does is just slightly puts himself in the way of Thibault. So Thibault runs into him and they call a foul, and that's 2 free points. It's annoying, but come playoff time, it's going to help consistently.
He's going to like.
All I'm trying to say is they have the most on the court leadership
chemistry
in the entire NBA.
Monty Williams as well.
Yeah, Monty Williams as well, along with the head coach as well. And they have a Devin Booker that's taking his game to a whole nother level. This guy cannot miss from three or mid-range.
By the way, Femi, I want to apologize. When I said Tatum is better than Book, I wasn't a seasoned.
When I was trying to,
sometimes the prisoner of the moment, Tatum was cooking at time. You didn't get to see Book a lot.
When I started to realize Book was that guy, was the 40-point triple double in game one against the Clippers. I was like, yeah, there's something about this dude. He's special.
To think that Book of the finals is different than the Book right now is scary.
And he's a man on a mission. He's a man on a mission.
Mm-hmm. It's very scary. The man is moving like Kobe in that mid range.
Bro, I saw his stats yesterday. Chris Paul is shooting 57% in the clutch for the Suns. Devin Booker is shooting 64% for the Suns in the clutch. How do you win games? Right. How do you win tight ball games when their superstars are shooting well above 50% from the field come clutch time?
They can shoot free throws as well.
You just can't.
You know what? And the thing is, they've been there. So they know what it's like.
They know what it's like to lose.
It hurts.
Sometimes that feeling of losing is what a team needs to spur them on. Because we saw it happen with LeBron's Miami. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. I remember. You ever see the clip where when the confetti, right? Book looked at the confetti and he goes, damn. You ever see that clip?
Yeah.
That clip, I was just like, bro, not seeing that, I know. No.
He's a man on a mission.
But the thing is, I wouldn't want to see him in the playoffs at all. They will beat you top. Mid-range rebounds, free throws.
No. I was a bit skeptical about them, but I'm starting to buy into it. Like, I'm starting to see why Phoenix should be a favorite in my eyes.
See, let me just give you this quick stats. Their last game, Mikal Bridges shot only 8 times and scored 14 points. DeAndre shot only 11 times and scored 17 points. Chris Paul, 11 times, 10 points. Jay Crowder, 7 times, 11 points. Cam Johnson, 9 times, 10 points. Tony Craig, 9 times, 14 points. Peyton, 11 times, 10 points. Do you see what I'm seeing right here? Mm. These guys, they don't have
all-around contribution.
That's what I'm saying. They don't have someone that is taking 30 shots. Only Devin Booker took 24 shots and scored 26 points. This team scored 132 points and is so balanced. For them to score 132 points, they don't have someone that needs to score 60 points. It is so balanced.
Yeah.
You see, every single player has taken a step in one direction. Mikal Bridges without mid-range is automatic for me.
I hear that. I hear you guys, man. Especially come clutch time, CP3 pick and roll, where he fades to his right to pull up for mid range. You can't stop.
Let me tell you something. I'm going to have a shot in my
hand. I saw it happen like 4 times against the Sixers. I just realized, yeah, you can't stop it. You can't. When he's fading to his right, unstoppable. But yes, out of the Phoenix Suns, they've become my favorite in the West just because. You know, I think it's because they are a team in Arizona. They're not cool. You know, same thing happened with the Arizona Cardinals when they were winning earlier this season. Not enough people were talking about them. But for me, the Suns deserve every single accolade they're going to get. So let's get into trade deadline reactions, right? And because, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about other things, I just want us to quickly brush through some of the deals. Dragic's leaving Toronto. As far as I'm concerned, to hell with him. I don't care about him.
Bye-bye. See you later.
Good riddance. I was a bit shocked because there were talks we were supposed to get Porzingis, but Bobby Webster didn't. Porzingis for Dragic and the first, you know, but Bobby Webster didn't want to take on his max contract because I don't know. I think they want to do something in the offseason, but Toronto is playing really well. Congratulations, Jared Allen, for becoming an all-star. Siakam probably deserves it. But you know, Jared Allen's having an amazing season as well. With Derek White to the Celtics, I feel like not exactly the point guard they need, but it's a start. He plays defense, good playmaking. You know, He should turn, therefore ease up some of the tension on.
Wait, is he a point guard? I thought he was a shooting guard.
Oh, yeah,
no, he's a point.
He's more of a point guard. He was running the two because of DeJounte Murray.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. The Sacramento Kings showed us why they're the worst team, worst franchise in NBA history. They saw the Portland Trail Blazers acting up and they said, hey, man, ain't nobody stealing our crown, bro. We are the worst team, man. We hang it on our chest. And they decide, this is not even a team that is in. This is not a team. They are not in win now. They are not in win in the next 5 years. Right?
While they made some questionable trades, they got Sabonis and they've won two games in a row now.
Why would I trade Tyrese Halliburton for Domantas Sabonis when Sabonis is not the final piece I need for a championship? He's the final piece I need to not finish last in the West, championship.
You have to think about it. Halliburton and their point guard, what's his name? De'Aaron Fox.
Man, I get rid of De'Aaron Fox. Tyreek, you know, Tyrese Halliburton.
I think Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox is better than Halliburton and De'Aaron Fox.
Stop it.
They never had a center that they could run plays through.
You know what? It's cool. Let's watch it. There's no tea. The Indiana situation is way better than the Sacramento situation. And so for Sabonis to leave the Indiana Pacers to a lesser team, I feel bad for him. Because I swear to God, when the Kings offered the trade to Sacramento to the Pacers, they were like, oh boy, you didn't want me. Because how Tyrese Halliburton? It's cool, man. It's cool. CJ McCollum to the Pelicans. Here's the thing. If Zion comes back and, you know, works on himself, there could legit be a big three growing up in New Orleans in CJ, BI, and Zion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
No, definitely.
But. If I ever see the GM of Portland Trail Blazers on the street,
like, no, I'm even done with them. In fact, Portland, continue. At this point, it seems to me like Dame is running from the grind. Because
no. You can never accuse
them. Think about it. Exactly. You see, this is the point I'm trying to make. When Dame's career ends, what would you think of? He was let down by his team countless times. Well, the opportunity
Aaron Rodgers. The
opportunity arose for you countless times to pack your stuff and leave. Look at Matthew Stafford. When they would have looked at his career as, oh, his team let him down countless times. But when the opportunity presented itself for him to go and compete for a championship, he snapped it up. Dame should have snapped it up since. At this point, it looks to me like he's like, okay, if I bring a title to Portland, I'm Gucci. If I don't, I'm Gucci because they will understand my team let me down. That's why I say it looks like he's running from the grind.
No, you have to understand that he probably saw Giannis win with Milwaukee.
But it's not going to happen consistently. The Milwaukee front office is not the same as the Portland front office.
Thank you.
I mean, it's clear to see that the Portland front office is either they're trying to sabotage Dame to frustrate him to leave.
Dame should leave regardless. Dame should
lack basketball knowledge.
When Kevin Garnett wanted to leave the Minnesota Timberwolves, nobody questioned him because they knew he had given his all for that team and they couldn't give him what he wanted.
Dame should have.
This is an excuse from Dame as far as I'm concerned. I don't want to hear nothing about Dame's team because he's consistently had the chance to go to a team to compete for a championship. And all he's done is say, I love Portland. He's running from the grind. That's my opinion.
Dame should have left either after they got swept by the AD-led. If you get swept by AD-led, Rondo and AD,
Pelicans,
they sweep you.
Or when when they got swept by the Warriors.
By the Warriors. Absolutely. Those 2 years, you gotta go.
Definitely.
The offseason was nothing fun.
Yeah. Kristaps Porzingis to the Washington Wizards.
That's scary.
I saw this and I said, damn, bro. Mark Cuban must have hit some real loud before he made that trade because I've tried to understand it. Spencer Dinwiddie is not an expiring contract. They don't need another point guard. Tosin was telling me they're bracing themselves for Jalen Brunson leaving. So you don't trade Kristaps Porzingis for Spencer Dinwiddie to cover for Jalen Brunson when their games don't even match. Like it's taken me almost one week, and I still don't understand that trade.
Among all the trades, apart from Portland, because Portland, they are not a team. Apart from Portland, that trade is the most confusing trade, in my opinion.
Facts.
Because Porzingis for a ball handler, when they already have two ball handlers, they have someone coming off the bench, and they have a starter that dominates.
Think about it. They never really effectively used Porzingis. I was watching I saw the box score of the game against the Clippers, right? How many field goals did the Dallas Mavericks attempt? 85. How many field goals did Luka himself attempt? 33. That's almost 40% of the field goals attempted by the teams. You can't win like that. And it's the same. This is what I keep telling you guys about the Mavs, right? They asked Ty Lue after the game, Luka put on a show. How do you feel about it? He said, Luka can get 90 points for all I care as far as we win the game. Because the game plan is to let Luka take as much shots as he wants because he can't beat you on his own. And that is what
the other day they won. It took Luka to score 50 points.
51.
Yeah.
And it was still a close ball game. Exactly. That's the point I'm trying to make. They need to surround Luka with pieces he can work with. Not Spencer Dinwiddie. Man, I'm done, bro. I'm done.
The West is becoming the East. They don't know what they're doing.
Bray, can I just say? I'm proud of you. And I just want to realize,
is it because of what I said about Luka?
Yeah. If you say anything bad about Luka, might I say?
Nah, but fine. My plan has always been, like, Luka, right? He kept. Here's my thing. This is why I never called.
You know, Luka, we don't have a lot of time, so we have to.
Yeah, I'm. You want to be sure? This is why I've never called Luka a top 10 player. Yeah, he hasn't had the impact on winning as a top 10 player should have.
That's a fair point. You look at what CP has done to Phoenix. So, but then again, the roster and the way the teams use players, like, sorry to bring this up again, and we're going to move on to James Harden right now. But you cannot have Kristaps Porzingis on your team in the playoff time and watch Ty Lue go small and decide, I would play Boban Marjanovic in the post and I would use Kristaps Porzingis as a floor spacer, right? And Tosin will tell me once again, Boban acted in John Wick. He's hard. I know. But it's still a stupid decision.
But yeah. Actually forget about that.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, what everyone has been waiting for us to talk about. Is James Harden the man to bring a chip back to Philly?
James Harden's afraid of chips. I want you to be all to know that. Every time is crunch time to actually affect the championship run, my guy disappears. So my answer is no.
I hear you guys. You know what? I was like, go ahead, because I have quite the speech prepared.
My answer is maybe.
Don't sit on defense, please. I need a definite answer.
Stephen A. Smith will always tell you.
Okay, Femi is actually sitting on the maybe, so maybe that's how he genuinely feels. Here's the thing.
No.
I get it. James Harden is usually the number one option on offense on these championship teams, right? This time around, it's Joel Embiid. So having a James Harden put up like a Joel Embiid's probably going to pull up 30 in the playoffs. Harden probably going to put up 25. That's 55 of the probably 100, 120 points you need to win a game, right? I get it. But I was thinking about it. James Harden, I have nothing against James Harden. Perennial All-Star, only man to make 10 All-Star teams in a row alongside Kobe Bryant and LeBron James, right? He's the he's probably the greatest perimeter scorer of definitely of this generation and probably of all time, right?
Yeah,
so these are all regular season stats. I thought about it. Why hasn't James Harden won a ring? And every single year James Harden hasn't won a ring, it has a big part to do with him. Let me bring this up. 2015 conference semifinals. James Harden didn't show up. He averaged 25, 8, and 8, yeah, but he didn't shoot up to 40% from the field. Is that good enough for me, superstar come playoff time?
No.
Okay. In game six, they were down. This was against the Clippers, right? They were down 19 in the third quarter. Josh Smith brought them back with 14 in the four. The Rockets went on a run to close the series in five games. That's cool, right? In conference finals against the Warriors, you know when the Warriors won the chip in 2015. It was game two. If the Rockets win that game, they take a game back to the Toyota Center with them to try and make this a series. James Harden has the ball in his hands to take the lead. They were down one with 4 seconds to go. What does he do? He turns the ball over to Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. They end up losing the series in five. Close out game five. He went 2 of 11 from the field, 0 for 3 from 3. 0 for 3 for 3, 14 points and 12 turnovers. Playoff record. Is that good enough?
I know that.
Okay. Games 5 and 6 of the 2017 conference semifinals against the Spurs. In games 5 and 6, he had more turnovers alone than the entire Spurs team did in those two games.
I know.
In game five, Kawhi Leonard sat out the last few minutes of the regulation and overtime with an injury, and Harden does nothing, gets blocked by Manu Ginobili for the game.
Yeah, I know.
Game six,
Kawhi did not play.
In that game five, he had 33, 9, and 10, which is good. He also had 9 turnovers, second most in the playoffs.
I know.
Okay. Game six, probably the worst performance of James Harden's career. He goes 2 of 11 from the field for 6 points and 6 turnovers, and he fouls out. Kawhi didn't play that game. If you are that guy, you go and you get your team that game. He also did not attempt the shots in the first quarter and the first half of the second quarter, right? These are not things I'm making up. These are all things that have happened from James Harden. We all know what happened in 2017 in game seven of Western Conference Finals against the Warriors in 2018.
Absolutely.
They missed 27 straight threes. Harden goes 2 for 13 from 3 and 12 of 29 from the field. Is that going to beat the KD Warriors? No,
absolutely not.
He didn't have CP, but once again, he didn't show up. 2019 Conference Semifinals. KD goes down. Game six. Steph has 0 in the first quarter, ends up with 33. Harden does not show
0 in the first half.
Harden does not show. These are all things, and then you think back to 2012, where he was the sixth man. He had the worst performance of his career in that series against Miami. Last year, even though I get it, he was injured, but nobody seems to pay attention to the fact that Russell Westbrook was injured playing on a turn court for the Rockets. So I'll bring this up. He also didn't show up last year. So I've provided you evidence consistently of James Harden not showing up in the playoffs, which is why I believe it's either time for him to turn the script or seal the script. He's either going to make it known. He's either going to make it known that he's not a playoff performer, or he was just unfortunate. Or he was just unfortunate in those situations. Because, like, for me to be able to dig up all this evidence after researching for just 1 hour on James Harden alone, it says a lot.
I didn't do any research. I put the 1 and 2 turnovers. playoffs, Harden has those records. And I've seen those games. I'm looking at it on the box score. I need you to watch those games.
Oh, I didn't watch all those games, but I watched I went back and watched the 2017 conference final semifinals when Kawhi didn't play game six. I will put it in Stephen A's words. James Harden didn't choke, because for you to choke, you have to show up in order to choke.
Absolutely. I'm telling you. Are you telling me you couldn't win against Manu Ginobili?
Tony Parker didn't play as well.
Tony Parker didn't play. That's going to be my second point. Danny Green, I don't think it was even LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah. Yep. So this, which is the reason why I have doubt. Like my number one, I said it last week. My number one option for Philly was going to be Dame. I would pick Dame over Harden to pair with Embiid any day. But like I said, China Sharp always says, sports, you can update your resume with just one win. One chip will change the resume for James Harden. If he shows up in Philly and they win the chip, then a lot of things have changed for him, which is why, for me, even before we get into our playoff predictions and all that, he's the man with the most pressure come playoff time. Like, there's nobody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Femi, Tosin, go ahead.
Tosin, he has the best player in the
world. I think James Harden, we can all agree that he has a lot to prove, especially in the playoffs. The only thing I would say, like I said before, just to reiterate, I don't think it is an aberration as to how he's playing right now. I think he has shown it for an extended period of time for me to think he's an aberration.
That's reasonable. It's reasonable because if you look at it, he's not as fit as he used to be. He's heavier. He's not as quick as he used to be.
And a lot of his points are usually predicated on free throws. Since the rule change is more difficult, not to say he's not going to have a good game here and there, but to rely on him as
his three ball is also not consistent enough.
Yes,
exactly. He made a lot because he took a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know if you get what I'm saying. And even another problem.
Yeah.
And no problem, James Harden is not playing the All-Star game. Why? Hamstring. These things will come back to haunt you.
Yeah.
Which is why
that hamstring has been bothering you for...
Exactly. Which is why you can't fault me for not being too quick to say the Sixers are my favorites to win the chip.
Which is what I was seeing on the first. And here's the thing. Objectively, Harden has never shown up. Never, ever shown up. And remember the one time, he's only made the conference finals in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. I believe it was just 4-1. One or two. I might be wrong. But the one that pissed me off the most was that Curry had zero in the first half. No Kevin. That's the game you gotta win.
Yeah,
I give you the rest of like your mishaps because like playoffs happen, but like no kidding, we're talking smack the whole time.
Yeah,
if we had Chris Paul, but we have Chris Paul. Okay, it didn't happen. It's there now. You guys have to step up and the man step back.
Yeah, facts.
That's where I have my and here's the thing: if he doesn't win this playoffs. He has no excuses because he has
to. Yeah, facts.
One more thing about that team. I think the introduction of James Harden, ball dominant player, is going to stunt the development of.
Listen, you know damn well I don't agree with this. You know damn well.
I know you don't agree with this, but it doesn't make my opinion wrong. I think Tyrese Maxey's development is very predicated on. Dominating the ball. He's a point guard.
But Tyrese Maxey can run the offense, especially with the second unit. Like, the reason Tyrese Maxey was getting a lot of minutes was because the Sixers, they didn't have a guard in the first place. Now James Harden can take over the primary ball handling duties, and Tyrese Maxey can come in and still handle the ball because, you know, they are the two primary ball handlers they have on that team.
Okay, but think about it. James Harden, when on the court, is going to handle the ball like at least 90% of the time. And when he's not handling it, he's giving it to Joel Embiid. Tyrese Maxey has to be a catch and shoot guy if he's going to like succeed. I don't think he's a catch and shoot guy.
True, but if they play, Maxey off the bench, that's he can come in and
if they play Maxey off the bench, that would be good. But that's still stunting his growth, dude.
I don't think so, does it? I don't think so.
At the end of the day, you know, you gotta play. Everybody has roles on the team.
You have to play to grow, and as long as you're playing, you're gonna grow as a player.
Absolutely. Look at Giannis. Giannis did not start off like this. Giannis was skinny as hell.
Yeah.
Giannis was looking like the letter I with the dot on top.
What about when you look at players like Kyle Kuzma succeeding on Washington?
You know what's funny?
LeBron, they succeed more.
You know what's funny? Kuz's best season is still not this season.
Thank you.
Is that season he first linked up with Bron? He averaged 18 that season when Bron came. But Bron was out for majority of the season.
Okay.
But that is Kuz's, because his numbers are better that season than this season.
Okay, so you're still making my point. LeBron was injured for majority of this.
No, but he still averaged 18. He was single leading scorer on that team.
I hope I'm wrong because I like
Kuz was never really the second option, right? Kuz was never really a primary ball handler because he's a point forward. He's a power forward. But Tyrese is a ball handler. He's a point guard. He's going to come in. He's going to run the offense. And as long as he's running the offense, I don't think that's going to derail or stunt his growth in any way.
All right. We'll definitely see.
Yeah, guys, we've overshot our time. We spent a lot of time, especially talking about James Harden. But yeah, we've come to the end of another episode of the Courtcast. This was a long one. Thank you for listening. If you're still here, you're a real one. And I know damn well you guys agree to my James Harden take. You got to appreciate, you know, everything that went into it.
I smell cap.
So let's go home, man.
Thank you for coming on the show. A riled up Femi, step back, Papi, and beat the cop. thanks for coming on the show, Tosin. I hope you see the Bengals in your dreams.
You gotta tell me how Shannon Sharp tells him. You see that hate in your heart that needs
you see, the next time I come on this show, I'm coming with a cross because, like Shannon said, I'm about to do y'all dirty, so I gotta pray to God for forgiveness before I do.
All right. I'm gonna get you a Matthew Stafford jersey.
I already have a cross on my ring, so. Shout out Cooper Kupp, man. That was amazing from him. I just heard his story yesterday from Tosin. But yeah, thank you for listening to another episode of the Courtcast. Check us out on Instagram. Check us out on Twitter. Give us a follow on these platforms. Check our episodes out on all podcast streaming platforms. Leave a rating. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everything. Tell a friend. Even though it's Valentine's Day, they should listen to the Courtcast. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
It's a Slam Time production.